bringing you the truth behind the news. Welcome to The New American.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Paul Dragoo. We're glad you joined us. Many of us remember what it was like watching the returns on election night of November 3rd, 2020. Remember the look of terror on the faces of propagandists posing as journalists as they realized that Donald Trump was on path to win again. And remember when we realized that something very wrong was happening. In many high-density areas like Atlanta and Philadelphia, they stopped counting votes. And by the next morning, the picture had completely flipped. And as time went by, it only got worse. Once the heist had been pulled off, we realized that one of the most essential components of liberty, our freedom to choose our leaders, had been stolen from us. The consequences of that rigged election have been the subject of episode after episode on this show. Every normal American feels the effects every day. The America of 2019 is unrecognizable from that of today. The realization that the man occupying the White House today is illegitimate has prompted many to action. A couple weeks ago, I interviewed Dr. David Clements, who has been on an election integrity crusade across the country ever since. Today, I'm interviewing another person dedicated to restoring security and trust in elections. After the 2020 election, Wisconsin State Republicans hired former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman to look into what happened here in the Dairy State. And despite a slew of roadblocks, Gableman eventually rolled out a 136-page report on what he found. He joins us now. Welcome, sir.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So in your report, you document numerous questionable and I believe you even use the word unlawful issues. And you broke it down into 10 chapters. Give us the 30,000-foot view, and then we can kind of drill down into some of the specifics.
I certainly will. But Paul, before I start, I want to say in your introduction, you said that I had been hired by the Republicans. And yes, the Republicans at that time held the majority in the legislature, as they do now. But I was hired by the Wisconsin Assembly. Why do I make that distinction? I make that distinction because I served the people of the state of Wisconsin for about 30 years in one capacity or another. I started out as a judicial law clerk, and then I became an assistant district attorney and then a district attorney. Then for 6 years, I was a trial court judge on our state's highest level of trial court. And then I spent 10 years on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. At all times, I was attracted and remained in public service because I knew that motivating myself to do the best work I possibly could on behalf of the public, on behalf of the public good. You know, I come from what most people would call a lower middle class background. We didn't know lawyers or judges when I was growing up. And like many of the people listening and watching us right now, I had no idea what was going on behind the curtain. And I always vowed that if I was in a position to do it, I would simply share the truth as I knew it to be, with the people that I was elected to serve. And I'm irritated. I view it with two minds when I read. I was a history teacher in Milwaukee Public Schools, is where I started before I went to law school. And reading biographies and autobiographies of political figures, it seems to me that typically they wait until after their career is over. And then they give a behind the scenes account and say, well, here's what really happened. I always thought to myself, what a waste. Why not say it while it's going on? For instance, and then I'll get more directly to the topic you asked about. But one scene that keeps replaying in my mind is President Dwight Eisenhower. I think the historians are finally catching up to what a great president he really was. In one of his last addresses to the nation, he warned us about the military-industrial complex taking unwarranted power over the citizens of this country. And part of me says, well, that's wonderful because we needed someone of Ike's stature to say it, but maybe he could have said it about 8 years prior to that and then framed the argument as kind of what you're doing. I watched one of your shows the other day, and I watched the the invasion that's occurring on our southern border. And it's not limited to one race or nationality. It's people coming from all over the world, many of whom want to do harm to our country. Let's talk about it. Yeah. Let's have an honest discussion. And that's what I wanted to do. That's what I wanted to do with my investigation of the 2020 election in Wisconsin. I wanted to have an honest, rigorous discussion. And when I took the job, I was beholden to nobody. A guy named Robin Voss was the Speaker of the Assembly. He calls himself a Republican. I don't even know what that means, Paul, because I believe that the leadership of both parties has, for the most part, sold out the citizens. They've lost whatever
allegiance they had to the people,
whatever dedication to public service they had. So many of them have lost in the pursuit of riches. We see that with Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden, how they increase their personal wealth on comparatively modest salaries, or the Republicans too. I ran as a Republican. I used to consider myself a Republican. I don't know what that means anymore, because I don't feel that either party's leadership is watching out for the people. And I think the rest of my fellow citizens are catching on to that. So I certainly, after an entire career, over 20 years of elected office, either as a prosecutor or as a judge of one type or another, my sole charge was to do what I thought was right. And taking on this role of investigating, if it was going to implicate Republicans, then it was going to implicate Republicans. If it was going to implicate Democrats, that was fine too. I went into it hoping that I could take a deep dive into everything, kind of as a quasi-judicial, with the only goal being the search for the truth.
Yeah.
And maybe my prayer when I started was that after a rigorous, thorough examination, I could turn to my fellow citizens and say, I've looked at it all, and it's fine. It's honest, and it's transparent, and it's open. Unfortunately, I found none of that. You know, when our country goes around the world to lecture other countries about how they should run elections, and they have a uniform standard procedure of how to do that. They call one of the three pillars that the United States government lectures other governments about is the need for transparent elections.
Yeah.
It's a overused word right now, but let's use the definition of a process that is not only easily and capable of ready understanding by the average person, but also available for the citizens' inspection. We do not have that in Wisconsin. We didn't have it in 2020. We don't have it now, and I don't believe we have it in any of our states, that the so-called experts, here it's called the Wisconsin Election Commission, which is run by a woman named Megan Wolf, who I think helped make it possible for all sorts of improprieties to occur that resulted in a rigged election. And when I say rigged, I mean that it wasn't run according to the traditional, and this is inarguable, that it wasn't run according to the rules and the law as they had been in place. And because the media has been uniformly supportive of Megan Wolf, our current director of the Wisconsin Election Commission, and it's been uniformly supportive of Robin Voss, because Robin has done absolutely nothing to either remove Megan Wolf. He's the only person in the state. Megan Wolf's term of office was over. She is over. It ended last July.
Yeah.
But she still sits in office. Furthermore, the state Senate wrote a public letter to Robin Voss, because Robin, as the Speaker of the Assembly, is the only person in the state who can call for an impeachment vote.
Mm.
President of the Senate wrote to Robin Voss a few months ago and said, Speaker Voss, please start the process to impeach Megan Wolf, because we have the votes here in the Senate to remove her from office. So that's just a little bit of the background. That's a lot more than you asked for.
No. It's okay. Yeah. I want to get into that lack of transparency because that seemed to be one of the biggest issues. We're going to get into that right after this. If we aren't self-reliant, we aren't free. And if we can't take care of ourselves without the so-called help of government, how much liberty do we really have? That's why the New American Magazine has released a special collector's edition bookazine on this very important topic. It's called Self-Reliance, Foundation of Freedom. America has a rich tradition as being the home of staunchly independent explorers, religious dissidents, and general malcontents who seek to live the way humans are intended to, free. It's time to get back to those roots, and living an independent life is key. In our latest special edition, we cover a number of self-reliance-related topics, including the self-sufficiency of the Founding Fathers, self-reliance lessons from COVID, preparing for a worst-case scenario, financial independence, and the importance of community, among many other important topics. The writers are experts in their fields, and they provide a handy guide to get you started. So go to thenewamerican.com/shop and order your copy. Heck, get two. One for you, another for someone you care about. But even better, for $5 more, you can get our entire collector's edition packet, which in addition to the one on self-reliance, includes Trump World and the Great Reset. Again, visit thenewamerican.com/shop, or you can even order by phone at 920-749-3780 Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 p.m. Central Time. That's 920-749-3780. Folks, we are back with Justice Michael Gableman of Wisconsin. He had a report on the elections that happened in 2020. Justice Gableman, we're going to get into some of that, some of those irregularities and suspicions of unlawful activity that you found during your investigation. And I also want to get into all the roadblocks. It seems like you were kind of already hinting at some of that, that you weren't able to conduct the investigation as you would have liked to, and that would have been that would have certainly done a service to the Wisconsin people. So where do you want to start with in your report as far as what you discovered?
I'd like to start with the absolute primary and most basic aspect of any election in a free society. And if we are a free society, and if we are going to remain a free society, then we need to have transparency. And right now, with the use of computerized voting machines, we have the opposite of transparency. We have the opposite of the ability to understand how elections are run. Now, our state's rapidly diminishing largest newspaper, who's probably down to about 10% circulation of where they were just 5 years ago. It's hilarious. The people are just reacting to the blatant Bolshevik kind of intolerance they have for other views such as mine. And they criticized me because when I went to appear...
Are you referring to the Milwaukee Sentinel?
Yeah, I don't want to give them any advertising. But they know who they are. I know who they are.
Fair
Everybody
enough.
In the state knows who they are. Now, they ran from a so-called reporter who wasn't even there when I was talking informally with a group of people. See, what happened is after I was appointed, I went up to the city of Green Bay to talk to the city council there to introduce myself and to let them know what I was going to be about and to, frankly, ask for their cooperation and ask for them, for the mayor and for the mayor's assistants. There were two assistants, and then there was a third guy named Michael Spitzer Rubenstein from Brooklyn, New York, who worked on Obama's campaigns and on the former mayor of New York, the Bill de Blasio's campaigns, who has no connection to Wisconsin whatsoever. But he actually wound up running the election in the city of Green Bay with Megan Wolf's help and assistance and provide cover so that the mayor there could. So I was hoping that we could have a civil conversation to say, this is before I really had started most of the substantive work. And I was hoping naively in retrospect, in perfect hindsight, I see I was completely naive, that maybe this was all a big misunderstanding and we could talk about it.
Not well, so, huh?
I introduced myself, and then they went into closed session for about 2.5 hours. And then they emerged 2.5 hours to tell me that they had hired three different law firms to represent themselves. So in between, I'm talking with the audience and I'm telling them about my appointment and what I view my role as a neutral fact finder, as someone unbound by any kind of political or partisan agenda, just searching for the truth. And one of the audience members raised her hand and she started talking. She said, "You know, I just don't understand how these voting machines work." And I said, and I agreed with her because it's true. I'd thought about this for many years when I put my paper ballot into this computerized machine. I have no idea what happens to that information. I have no idea of the details of the computer programming.
Mm-hmm.
By all legitimate accounts, and there's a lawsuit going on many places, but the one in Georgia with Professor Halderman, who's dedicated his career, who was not a conservative, who's not a Republican.
Yeah. He's the one that pulled out the pin in court, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's what, you mentioned the machines. There's an interesting, many interesting sections.
May I just finish the anecdote? I know I took the long way around, Paul, but
sure.
Let me just
go ahead.
I like everybody else, I put my paper ballot into the machine and I just sort of hoped for the best, which is a nice line. And it's also accurate. And then the so-called reporter who wasn't even there, they wait about a week, 5 days or so. And then they put on top of the Sunday paper, on top of the banner headline, "Gableman says he doesn't know how elections work." Now, that's just a perversion of truth, and that's just a blatant political act, you see, that started this whole trend of undercutting my investigation literally from the day it started. And they had to take such gross liberties with the truth to take things like that, and the coverage was like that throughout. And I ask myself, why doesn't the media want to report on this? And the only answer I can come up with, Paul, is that they're happy with the result that was declared, with Joe Biden being the so-called winner mm-hmm. of our state by about 20,806 ballots. That's why I got it.
They think the means justify the ends. That's how these people think. And the reason that reporter reports like that is because he's a propagandist. I mean, that's what propaganda is. It's lies of various different ways. And obviously that was just miscontext. That was a lie. Because
he'll be comforted to know he now works for the Washington Post.
Where he belongs. Yeah. So you mentioned machines. Like I was starting to say, it's like in your report, you say that all machines in Green Bay were ESS machines. You said, by the way, there were two types of machines mostly used here, and that's ESS and Dominion. And further, yes. You said they were connected to a secret hidden Wi-Fi access point at a Grand Hyatt Hotel, which was the location. Anyway, so there's a lot of things in there. What have you discovered about these machines? It seems you also seem to have discovered that they are connected. Can you go into, are machines problematic, or is it just the boogeyman that we right-wingers apparently use?
I want to focus on what you just said in the last 45 seconds or so, because what you said was a lot. And there's a lot that our viewers and listeners need to understand about the hidden Wi-Fi connection, about the Grand Hyatt, and about Green Bay. You hit sort of the trifecta that is the emblematic of everything that went wrong with this election, so that even if there was no fraud, you couldn't have designed a system better capable of fostering and promoting fraud and hiding its detection. Let me tell you what I mean by that. This man, this Michael Spitzer Rubenstein of Brooklyn, New York, no contacts at all to Wisconsin, never assisted in running any kind of election. You remember COVID was going on, and this private group, Zuckerberg, Mark Zuckerberg and his wife, had given about $500 million to this outfit run by Obama staffers called the Center for Tech and Civic Life, run out of the Chicago office for what had been the Obama campaign headquarters, and its head, Tiana Epps Johnson, had just graduated from the Obama Fellowship Program, so she didn't have far to move, right? So she's receiving tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars from the Zuckerberg Foundation, and her job was to go contract with secretaries of state. Now, in Wisconsin, our Secretary of State position is neutered of any meaningful power. They did that because the guy there was a longtime Democrat and they didn't like him. And they literally put him in the basement. So instead of having a Secretary of State in charge of our elections, we have 1,852, more or less, municipal clerks who are in charge of the elections. So that is where... that's where Wisconsin turned out to be a prime spot to detect precisely what had gone on that we know about, that we know about. The machine manufacturers won't share with anyone their data, but maybe they're going to have to after a few lawsuits are resolved. But what we do know is bad enough, and that is that Tiana Epps Johnson came to Wisconsin, and she went to our five largest cities, and she had them sign contracts. And the contract said, the Center for Tech and Civic Life, run by Tiana Epps Johnson, will give to you cities, we will give you millions of dollars.
Justice Gableman, hold that thought, because we're going to come back and I want you to finish that.
Hey, America. How tired are you of mainstream corporate media's biased narratives and manipulated news? Their dishonesty and attempts to influence this generation have been exposed, put on display for anyone who's even half paying attention. But the New American Magazine has been an honest source of news and commentary for over 50 years. This is your opportunity to receive the stalwart of principled journalism at a deep discount. Picture a beautifully published magazine arriving at your doorstep twice a month, packed with insightful stories written with integrity. It's also available digitally on the New American's mobile app. Get up to speed with intelligent coverage from a freedom perspective. Right now, for a limited time, The New American is available to radio listeners at a 25% discount on a new subscription. Visit thenewamerican.com/radio25 and receive 25% off. Subscribe today at thenewamerican.com/radio25.
All right, and we're back. Justice Gableman, please continue.
They came in, Tiana Epps Johnson, with all of her Mark Zuckerberg money. And there was an intermediary, a very important intermediary between Mark Zuckerberg and Tiana Epps Johnson. And it was the man who wrote this book, Citizen's Guide to Beating Donald Trump. Now, it was written by David Plouffe, who was one of Obama's two primary campaign strategists that took him from being a community organizer in Chicago to being president of the United States. David Plouffe described a system. He wrote it in the summer of 2020 before he even knew who the Democrat candidate was going to be. And he described a system for beating Donald Trump, which required ballot harvesting of voters. And he never has the guts in his book to describe who he's actually talking about. He's talking about Black people. He's talking about African Americans. And why that's relevant is there's a line in this book that the 2020 election, David Plouffe informed us, is likely to come down to street by street, block by block, political warfare in cities such as Detroit, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee. What he meant by that, what he was referring to is the fact that Pew Research Company, along with many others, tells us that when African Americans, historically, and at the time of Plouffe's writing, I think it's changing. I think African Americans, as well as other less represented groups, I believe they're waking up.
Yeah,
to
Hispanics
being exploited by the leftists. But at the time of this writing, Plouffe knew what I knew, and that what everybody knew, which is that when African Americans voted, they had a tendency to vote 86% of the time for the Democrat candidate. However, we're less likely to show up at the polls on election day. So Plouffe knew that some process had to be put in place by which the ballots of African Americans in large urban areas could be collected. Enter Tiana Epps Johnson and her contracts with the cities. Tiana Epps Johnson then tells the cities in this contract, cities, you must run your elections the way that we, the Zuckerberg funded, David Plouffe administered, Democrat led, private corporation tells you to run the election, or you have to give the $10 million, the aggregate $10 million back, or whatever portion, whatever number of the millions of dollars each city received.
Mm-hmm.
That is how this guy from Brooklyn, New York, who I've invited any number of times, in fact, issued subpoenas, which were later withdrawn by Speaker Voss, even though Speaker Voss told the world, and I expected, I relied on his word, that he told the world that when I issued this second, you notice that the report you're describing, Paul, is not a final report. It's captioned second interim report, which by definition implies that there's going to be more, that this is just the interim report. That's because Speaker Voss had told the world that the issuance of the interim report was going to be, quote, just the beginning of the investigation. And I took a lot of comfort from that because I was having indescribable trouble finding Wisconsin lawyers who would be willing to participate and help me with this investigation. And when I asked them why, they told me they knew the media would be savage to them, and they were right. And I can't blame them. I can't blame them. I was having trouble securing funding. I had some funding, but I didn't know how long it was going to go. And we had totally non-cooperative, except I always make an exception for the city of Kenosha. They always seem to show up on time and be helpful. But the others, the four other five largest cities, Green Bay, I think I got the message across when I went up to introduce myself, and they ran and hid away for 2.5 hours, keeping all of us waiting and at the public hearing, and then came back and said, well, we've hired three law firms to defend ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, I'm not accusing you of anything. I just want to find out what happened. So Michael Spitzer Rubenstein is put in charge by the mayor of Green Bay, who signed this contract with Tiana Epps Johnson. And instead of the longtime dedicated public servant, Chris Teske, a magnificent public servant who was the city clerk of Green Bay for many years, very experienced, she wrote email after email to the mayor of Green Bay saying, these people that you're bringing in from New York and Chicago to run the election don't care about Wisconsin election law. They don't know about it, and they don't care about it. And I'm not going to stick around to be blamed. I'm not going to jail for all of the illegalities that these people from New York and Chicago are committing. And she took a leave of absence, and then she wound up quitting. So who did the mayor put in charge of the election in Green Bay? This guy named Michael Spitzer Rubenstein, not an elections person, not a lawyer, not just a pure partisan employed by the George Soros-funded National Vote at Home Institute, which seeks as its end goal default mail-in voting, either by email or by postal service, meaning that everyone in the country gets a ballot, and then they have to opt out of it. And that, to me, just seems preposterous, a preposterous way to foster even more fraud than we have already. So Spitzer Rubenstein overrules Chris Teske's order. Chris wanted to have the election where it had always been held, and that was in the Green Bay City Hall. It was Spitzer Rubenstein who went and made the contract with the Hyatt in downtown Green Bay. He secured large ballrooms for the storage of completed ballots. And in the contract, it's expressly stated that Spitzer Rubenstein will be the person to be given all four keys to the ballroom, and that nobody is to be allowed into that ballroom unless Spitzer Rubenstein approves of it. Spitzer Rubenstein further negotiated in the contract with the Hyatt the presence of several Wi-Fi systems, and one of them was a hidden Wi-Fi that ran up to his hotel suite. I would imagine he didn't get himself a regular room. You're on George Soros and Mark Zuckerberg's dime, or at least Zuckerberg's. Why would you economize? And he had access to that hidden Wi-Fi because that is where the central processing of the ballots took place, the central counting on election night. And in fact, it's only because of just a few brave citizens that we even know that Spitzer Rubenstein was running the election in Green Bay. There were citizens there observing this, wondering who the hell is this guy that nobody seems to know. He has an ID tag, but he's keeping the information side to his chest. So they just see a blank thing, a blank piece of paper. And everybody's following his orders. Yeah. And these citizens who've been to many, many elections are wondering, who the hell is this guy? And it results in them physically chasing Spitzer Rubenstein around the ballroom.
What?
But, yeah, I'm not kidding. Physically chasing this guy around because he didn't want to talk to him, that he knew that they had been asking all night, who are you? Where are you from? And so they finally somehow cornered him. There was a guy there who had served in the Marines, a young guy, a very likable, personable guy, but also a very courageous one.
Yeah.
I think he literally stopped Spitzer Rubenstein in his tracks and said, who are you? And he's, well, I'm a poll observer. Well, the rule is that all poll observers have to sign in when they come into the central count area. And so this fellow and the other citizens, a married couple, said, well, did you sign in to be an observer? No, he didn't. So finally, at 1 o'clock in the morning, Spitzer Rubenstein, because regular citizens, and I think there's something very important for all of our viewers to take away from this. It was regular citizens, not officials, but it was regular citizens who made him finally put his name down on the piece of paper. And as he was signing, Spitzer Rubenstein looks at everyone around and he says, you'll be sorry.
Justice Gableman, we gotta come back.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence proclaims God-given rights, and we intend to protect them. Working with people like you for over 50 years, preserving freedom and building a better tomorrow. Safeguarding the Constitution by limiting government power. We are restoring liberties, educating voters, and leading the freedom movement. Join with us. United, we will defend our rights. We are all Americans. We are the John Birch Society.
All right, we're back with former Supreme Court Justice of Wisconsin, Michael Gableman. Okay, so you just told a really interesting story. Apparently, the only reason we know about the Spitzer Rubenstein guy is because apparently the citizens took action and they were able to chase him down. Obviously, there was something really suspicious going on over there. So it sounds like to me that you do suspect that the machines are implicated in very suspect behavior here, right?
I don't know. I was never allowed to look at machines. I subpoenaed the machine manufacturers as well, but all of those subpoenas, I shouldn't say I subpoenaed. I had no power or authority to subpoena anybody. Robin Voss, Speaker Voss, signed subpoenas at the request of some people on my team, other investigators. But then before we could talk to them, and shortly before he shut down my investigation, Speaker Voss withdrew those subpoenas. Mm. But I will tell you, the greatest analogy I ever heard, and here's another guy, who a selfless patriot who spent a lot of money trying to help fellow citizens, Mike Lindell, said, boy, if people were accusing me of selling defective pillows and saying there was something really bad in my pillows, I would say, bring me one of the pillows. We'll cut it open on live TV or in front of whatever crowd, and we'll see what's in it. The machine manufacturers, however, are not only hiding their programming and how they program these things, which have already been demonstrated to be highly corruptible.
Yeah, and connected to the internet, which they said wasn't the case.
Well, that's right. They've been telling lies. The original story was they're not connected. They're not connected to the internet. They're not connected to the internet. Then that was proven wrong. And they said, oh, you meant that internet. Oh, I guess it was. I'm being sarcastic there. But that's how trustworthy they are. And that's why I say, if there is no fraud, you couldn't have designed a better system to foster the appearance of fraud and the suspicion of fraud than we have right now.
Tell us what you found as far as elder care facilities. Apparently they had like 100% sure. voting record. Is that
Megan Wolf, who serves, you know, she's no longer, her term is over as the administrator of WEC, but the five out of the six WEC commissioners voted to ignore the law that placed special voting deputies, that is a representative from each political party, along with a representative of the clerk's office, to go through assisted living facilities and nursing homes. And the whole idea is that by having one representative, both the special voting deputies are trained in how to deal with people who may suffer from the infirmities of aging and other impairments, so that their wishes, number one, to either vote or not vote, are respected. And of course, equally as important, their decision about who to vote for is honored. And the idea is having one from each party is going to keep the other honest. Well, somehow, five out of the six commissioners got it in their head that they could simply order the clerks to not follow the law. If I suppose they were here, they would say, well, we just said they could. We didn't order them to do it. But that's the kind of absurd, ridiculous kind of conversation we're down to. Nobody disputes that they ignored the law. And in fact, this isn't just me saying it. It's Sheriff Schmaling of the Racine County Sheriff's Department. And it was Lieutenant Mike Lewell, who was an excellent, excellent investigator. Sheriff Schmaling referred five out of the six commissioners for criminal charges to the district attorney of Racine County, who passed on it like Pontius Pilate, I guess, in this Easter season, washed her hands of it for whatever reason, and then sent it over to the Democrat attorney general, who used to work for the Perkins Coie law firm, which, of course, is one of the favored law firms of the Clintons and other Democrats. And of course, Josh Call said that he wasn't going to prosecute for that. So what happened is we received any number of stories. And in fact, I had eight different videos up on the website, which I presume Speaker Boss had taken down. Someone at the state had taken down, showing people in almost coma-like situations whose families were surprised to learn had voted. We had one gentleman who was a resident of a nursing home since about 1976 and hadn't voted in any of them. And then his son found out that supposedly he had voted in the 2020 election.
Who did he vote for? Do we know?
All the ballots were collected and put into the system. So we'll never know. But what we do know is that we had in one instance, an 18-year-old employee just sort of filling out ballots for the residents. And when she said to one of her managers, gee, these people don't even seem to be aware that there is an election going on. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. The manager said, well, put their wheelchair or bed or whatever in front of a TV for half an hour and turn the news on, then go see what they want to do. And so you did have a high turnout. Mm-hmm. You did have a high turnout, but the whole thing just stinks. It was just wrong. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, one area of plain fraud, and this is inarguable, that in Wisconsin, we have a system right now. I shouldn't tell people this, but it's the system, and whether someone uses this information to do bad things, the responsibility is really on Megan Wolf. It's not on me, because I'm just telling anyone can go online to the Wisconsin ballot system and represent themselves as a military personnel serving overseas. They can make up whatever name they want. They can make up whatever home address they want. And then they can make up and have those ballots that they've and never have to show ID.
Yeah.
They can then put a mailing address that's different from all the other addresses. And
they get a ballot.
They'll go to that mailing address. And how do we know this? Because
you did it.
I didn't, but a woman who had up until recently been the deputy director of the Milwaukee Elections Commission was just found guilty in the Milwaukee County Circuit Court last week or the week before of doing that three times. And she said she did it because she wanted to expose where the real fraud was. And when I argued in circuit court the day before the election to segregate all of the military absentee ballots to protect the legitimate ones and make sure they weren't canceled out by fraudulent ones, the law requires Megan Wolf and WEC to have a system in place that allows the clerks to verify whether the name of the person who is legitimate, whether they're serving in the military. And it's undisputed that they don't have that system, and it's demonstrable that they don't. But yet, that system still stands. That rank corruption, that rank area for fraud is wide open for anyone who wants to go ahead and do it.
Justice Gagnon, where does this leave us now? I mean, where are you on your investigation, and where are you on all the attacks against you? We have over a minute left.
Well, Robin Voss shut down my investigation, and I don't believe he ever wanted a real investigation to begin with. He told me that that I certainly wouldn't want to look at any machine issue. And that was before I even started. And I said, well, of course I'm going to look at machines, because my hope is I'll be able to look at machines and study them and tell my fellow citizens that they're fine.
Yeah, well, that's what you want.
I don't think they're fine. I don't think they're fine. That the machine manufacturers are not behaving the way innocent individuals behave. So Robin Voss, the current speaker, who, by the way, just last week, more people signed a petition for his recall from office than voted for him the last time around, when he had to spend $1 million of lobbyist money to beat a political newcomer. He had to lie about the newcomer, and he had to lie about supporting Trump or Trump supporting him. Well, President Trump came out to support his opponent. And then after the election, Robin feels free to tell the world that he's a never Trumper.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of guy that I was dealing with. And I've known him for a long time. I knew his reputation. I knew kind of what he was like. But boy, did I get an eyeful during the investigation. Mm-hmm. So he shut down the investigation. As far as the attacks or the criticisms, guess what? You mentioned at the very beginning of this interview, Paul, that I filed about a 130-page report. Not one sentence. I was on the witness stand in Los Angeles testifying at John Eastman's trial, attorney John Eastman, who was the lead lawyer for President Trump in the days right after the election. And I testified for a day and a half about all of the findings of all of my in my report. And I was going a little fast because I was trying to save time. And then during the first break, one of the lawyers asked me to slow down. And he said, you have to remember, the media has never reported any of these things. So they're hearing about the Zuckerberg money for the first time. They're hearing about David Plouffe's plan to beat Donald Trump being given $500 million and all of the mechanisms of city government and municipal government to put it into effect. This is the first time in downtown Los Angeles that the people of California are hearing about this. So not one word of that report. Oh, and I was cross-examined. I was cross-examined by the state's lawyer who had all the time in the world to cross-examine me. And believe me, I was in for the duration. I would have stayed till hell froze over, because I want now what I wanted at the beginning, which is the truth, which is what we do not have. Not one word of that report has been shown to be false. Where does that leave us? It leaves us in just a terrible, terrible situation. I'm going to just share with you how I ended my 3.5-hour presentation to the Wisconsin legislature when I presented what I thought was only going to be one in a series of reports, culminating in a final report. I said, listen, there are three budget-neutral things that this state could do to eliminate about 90% of the room for fraud. Number one, we have honest, accurate voting rolls. Right now, in a state with 4.5 million eligible voters, we have over 7 million names on the voter rolls. There's no reason for that. Number two, you make those freely available to the public. Right now, Wisconsin Election Commission will charge you $12,500 just to get one day's worth. Then you make the names and addresses of everybody who voted in the most recent election publicly available so that anyone who's interested can compare the second list to the first to see if they should have been voting. Right now, Wisconsin Election Commission will charge you not $12,500 like they do for the voting roll. They'll charge $10,500 for the list of the people who voted. And that's ridiculous. That's asinine. Make the voter rolls accurate. Make it so that no dead people are on the voter rolls. When I said Megan Wolf, if she were here, she would say, yeah, but HAVA, the Help America Vote federal law, says that we have to have a historical record of everybody who voted. And my response is the same that I responded in front of the Wisconsin legislature, which is that's fine, but there's nothing about the law that says that the historical record has to be combined with the current voter rolls. Put it at the Historical Society. Put it somewhere else. Don't mingle in dead people, names of dead people and names of people we know have moved away on the current voter roll. There's no good explanation for that.
Absolutely. Well, Justice Gableman, thank you so much. I really wish we had more time, but I think you did a pretty good job summarizing some of the problems, some of the suspicions about our elections, and it sounds like even some of the actions that could be taken by the legislature or the state. We appreciate your efforts. We wish you the best, and I'd love to have you back sometime, especially as we get closer to the election. Thank you very much, sir, for your service.
Thanks.
So thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of New American Daily. And remember to visit newamerican.com for more truth behind the news. And we will see you Monday.